Hi, and welcome to the Provider Podcast by NHS Providers. My name is Saffron Cordery, and this is the second episode in our Digital Board series. In this episode, we focus on lessons from clinical leadership. We hear from Aisha Rahim, Chief Clinical Information Officer and Deputy Medical Director at Lancashire and South Cumbria NHS Foundation Trust, and from Annalise McNair, Chief Clinical Information Officer at Salisbury NHS Foundation Trust. They talk about the fundamental importance of digital in their roles as clinicians, the questions boards should be asking, and how better collaboration can advance the digital agenda. You can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast. Find out more about our National Digital Boards programme by searching NHS Providers Digital Boards, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you. Provider Podcast. Today we are talking about digital boards and particularly lessons on clinical leadership. And I'm delighted to welcome two guests with us today. We've got Aisha Rahim, who is Chief Clinical Information Officer and Deputy Medical Director at Lancashire and South Cumbria NHS Foundation Trust. And we've also got with us Annalise McNair, who's Chief Clinical Information Officer at Salisbury NHS Foundation Trust. You're both very welcome. And what we're going to be talking about today is the role of clinical leadership in the NHS and the role of the Clinical Information Officer in particular. And I think if we think back over the last year and digital transformation, the pandemic has shown us that the need for digital capacity and capability across the NHS has never been more important. But we also know that digital wasn't invented with the pandemic, and that there's been a long history in really looking at how digital can bring the NHS into the 21st century, can really focus on transforming services for patients and for the public. And I think that we know that that can't happen without really effective clinical leadership and without really effective clinical ownership. So what I want to do today is explore those different elements of the clinical meeting the digital and what it actually means. So first of all, a really straightforward question, I hope, but an interesting one, which is, Aisha, if I could come to you first, how do you see digital as being fundamental to your role as a clinician? And what part did this play in your journey to becoming a Chief Clinical Information Officer?
So I've been a CCIO for about 4 years, just under 4 years now, I think. And actually, if you'd asked me at medical school what I'd end up spending most of my time doing, I can guarantee it wouldn't have been being a CCIO. So this is pretty much an accidental career. One, I think, as you've mentioned in the introduction, and you're vital for today's practice as providers of healthcare. So what I think the pandemic has shown is that we are starting to mainstream digital transformation, because it used to be seen, I think maybe in some quarters it still is seen, as something in a little box over there, something that's nice to have, rather than what I think it actually is, which is a core part of what we should be doing as care providers, essentially. This is not an optional extra. This is part of our core business. And like many people, I suppose, working in this space in terms of clinical informaticians, I got involved because I was frustrated at the state of NHS technology. And so being the kind of person who doesn't like to moan about something and then not do something about it, I sort of am a compulsive hand raiser, I suppose, in that sense. And seeing the struggles of myself and my colleagues on a day-to-day basis, getting that basic job done of care provision, and how technology was often something that made life more difficult rather than easier. That's what motivated me to work in this field. And now, 4 years later, most of my working week is actually spent working in digital health in some fashion or other. So it's really transformed the balance of what I do. But it's absolutely vital in order to provide care that's fit for the 21st century, in my opinion.
Thank you so much. And Annalise, are you a compulsive hand raiser is that your mode as well? What's your journey to CCIO?
So I suppose very, very similar. So I've been CCIO just over 2 years, just had to reapply for my post and have just been successful. And the post has changed drastically and dramatically, I suppose, in the last 2 years, in that originally the post was, there was three of us and we were joint CCIOs for the trust. And the same thing, I'm very much, if I see a problem, I'm not very, I need to find a solution for it. And ultimately hugely frustrated by patient safety issues, patients being lost to follow up, just because bits of paper would be getting lost. And I was hugely frustrated by that. And the opportunity arose and I stepped forward, or maybe everybody else stepped back, but I stepped forward. And it was originally a joint role, and now I am CCIO on my own, which I'm slightly daunted by. And it's just changing the balance. So I am mainly a clinician still, but it's changing the balance of my role. But it is all of those things that I just said that so frustrated about the digital systems and how we work, and are supposed to make life easier and safer and better. And they sometimes just aren't. And I want to be here to be able to make things better for everybody, because I'm frustrated by it as much as they are.
Thank you. So we're talking here about making things better. This is an improvement role. This is a role that really brings about some solutions. So how, Annalise, how do you champion the digital agenda in your organisation?
So I still pride myself on being a clinician first and foremost, and still having those contacts with my colleagues and being able to speak to them, for them to be able to come to me and bring ideas to me and bring, you know, issues to me, and to be able to work with them, but also acting as that link between them and the IT team, to be able to say to the IT team, you know, can we look at this? What are our ways around that? And I think it's just being that link between my clinical colleagues and the IT, and then also being able to take that further up to the execs, and just sharing the vision that everybody has and make and translating it for everybody.
Yes, and I think that translation point comes up quite frequently, actually, because it is like, for many people, digital can be a foreign language almost, and it's something that can be really difficult for people to understand. So that translation role and that bridge. Aisha, how do you work with your board to progress digital? Because I think that's probably somewhere where core understanding of the language of digital is fundamental.
It is really interesting, isn't it? Because I guess boards are still on a journey themselves, and you'll naturally have some people that are much more comfortable with the digital agenda and some people that perhaps don't feel as confident. And I hope that we get to a point where actually it's a prerequisite to working at that level, is that you absolutely have to have an understanding of the issues that govern how we transform digitally, in the same way that we would not expect a board member to say, oh, I'm not very good with budgets, or I'm not very good with finances. It just wouldn't be something that would be acceptable. And so I think we are still on that journey to making boards feel more comfortable and competent. I suppose that's partly my role as CCIO, and I'm quite lucky because in my organisation, the CCI role was paired with the Deputy Medical Director role. And I think having the position of the CCIO in such a level, I suppose, as will give them easy access to executive and non-executive colleagues, I think is really important. It's not a status thing. It is actually about being able to have those conversations with senior decision makers in the organisation. So part of the reason why I've been very lucky in that I've been able to affect as much change as I have within the organisation is by having those conversations with the various executive board members of the various non-execs. So I think if you're going to take digital transformation seriously, you have to allow clinical informaticians within your organisations, if that's as a CCI, you have to give them the ability to engage with people at that level of the organisation. Because if you are trying to change things from the bottom up, you have a much harder job on your hands, I believe. So being part of the medical director, obviously having a direct line of report to the medical director, is a really good way to start having those high level conversations, I think. But my job, one of the things I love about being a CCIO is that I've got a real mix of the strategic stuff, those conversations that I have with my board, but also getting my hands dirty and doing the real operational side, working with frontline clinicians. I'm still a jobbing clinician myself as well, and frontline admin staff, running those workshops, really trying to get a deep understanding of people's workflow on the ground as well. So it's such a privilege to do this job, but you absolutely are having those conversations at every level of the organisation. And that's where the communication comes in as well, because if you're trying to communicate your vision about a particular digital project, I don't know, for example, electronic prescribing, the way in which you frame that discussion is going to be very different if you're having that conversation with your director of finance compared with if you're having that conversation with a ward nurse, for example. So the CCIO is often a bridge between those different staff groups. And I always like to think of one of the key skills of a CCIO is being multilingual and being able to frame a discussion about a single project in different ways to different people.
That's really, really helpful and interesting. And I think you were talking there about your, you know, you've obviously got a direct line relationship to the medical director. But Annalise, I wonder if you could perhaps talk us through your relationships with others on the board, particularly the chief executive and any other kind of board digital lead that you have.
So as CCIO, I report directly to the director of transformation within the trust, but I also feel that I have an ability and I am able to go directly to the chief medical officer and also to the chief exec if that's what I feel the occasion needs. You know, if I am going out to recruit various clinicians, say, for example, using the electronic prescribing, we need clinicians to engage in that project. I know that I can go to the medical director and say, do you have people that you want to be involved in this? Is this something that you're happy for me to put out expressions of interest? So they have an open door policy, and I feel confident and comfortable to be able to go and speak to those people sort of very, very freely.
That's really interesting. And I wonder if, and this is a question it would be great if both of you could answer. So we're talking about those relationships and building those relationships in order to get things done, to get stuff done. Perhaps, Annalise, could you just talk about one of your perhaps more recent digital successes or steps forward in providing those solutions? Because I think, you know, you're both really highlighting that being the CCIO is really about getting stuff done, and that's why you've stepped forward for the role. So Annalise, what do you feel is a big tick, your most recent tick in the box?
Well, it is a tick that's still probably forming in the box, but it's the reason I became CCIO is why I stepped forward, is because I want rid of bits of paper. So I'm implementing electronic outcome forms within the trust. And that was my sort of pet project as becoming CCIO. That's what I wanted to develop. And through NHS Digital Academy, I think that's given me the skills to do it. And we're taking it forward. But then equally, I was also asked to chair a serious incident investigation panel recently. And that the results of that have then focused, I think, the trust minds again. And they have embraced the fact that the risks around paper outcome forms are not something that they're willing to accept any longer. And we've given them a time frame of about 18 months to implement electronic outcome forms across the trust. But actually, before Christmas, a meeting, the chief exec and the medical director said they were no longer prepared to accept that risk and they wanted it implemented within 6 months. So, yes. So the IT team have been working incredibly hard and we are getting there, and it's been a long slog. But so essentially we have until the summer to implement electronic outcome forms, and I'm very confident that we will achieve that. Yes, it won't completely mitigate every single risk, but I think it will do a long way to forward that, you know, to take that process forward. And so for me, it's incredibly exciting to see it all coming together and coming to fruition.
Thank you. Aisha, what's your tick in the box?
My most recent tick in the box is a project that we implemented last year, no, in fact, the year before now, called Advice and Guidance, which some people might be familiar with. And it is basically an electronic messaging system which allows GPs to contact secondary care clinicians for clinical advice, rapid clinical advice, in lieu of perhaps putting in a formal referral, which can often be a much more long and drawn out process. So we implemented Advice and Guidance in our organisation in a small area for psychiatry. So we are mostly a mental health and community trust, and it hadn't really been done elsewhere. And it was really fantastic to see this project go live in one area. And it was a fantastic collaboration between primary care, secondary care, and also the acute trust, not just mental health, because it was the acute trust close by to us who built the system and then hosted it for us. And the reason I'm so proud that our organisation has led with this is, well, First 86 came runner-up in an HSJ award recently for the driving efficiency through technology, which is an endorsement. But more importantly, I've had other teams in my trust who have heard about this knocking on my virtual door saying, please, please, can we have this system? And actually, if you work in digital transformation, sometimes you'll realise that it's quite hard to embed digital transformation. So when you actually have people actively asking for a system, you know you've hit upon a solution that really solves a real world problem. And since that has been implemented, we are starting to roll it out elsewhere. But we've also had agreement from our senior leaders that it should be embedded trust-wide as part of our service reconfiguration for our trust front door. And it's also being spread to other areas of the country from other organisations that have heard about the project that want to implement it in their own mental health trusts. So it's a really lovely example of a cross-system project that's been implemented in one area that's had really great outcomes, because it's about outcomes. It's not about, you know, putting something in because it's nice and shiny and new. It's about what have you achieved, and then it's the practices spread, because it's the reputation of the project has spread across the organization and beyond. I think it's just a lovely example of system working, which is of course how we should all be working and what we should all be aspiring to.
Yeah, thank you. And I think it's really important to focus on outcomes, because then we can look back and think about how we got to that outcome. And one of the things I'm really keen to know is, from your perspective, and Aisha, I'll come to you first, just thinking about the senior leaders within your organisation, your board and your senior leaders, what are the questions that you would expect them to be asking about digital transformation? I mean, we talk about language. So what's the core vocabulary that you think they should know? What should they be asking?
So in some ways, you don't need to know a lot of jargon, because ultimately, you know, it's very easy to fall into the mistake of thinking this as a really technical achievement. And actually, what we are trying to do is we are trying to improve and transform. And the vehicle happens to be technology, but ultimately, we are all in the business of improving the safety and the quality of the services we provide. And we have that as a common language. We can all get behind that, can't we, no matter what our vehicle for improvement is. So the kinds of things that I would expect my board colleagues to be asking me about and talking to me about is, you know, where can we add most value, first of all? Where can we improve lives for our patients and our staff? Because it's not always the places that you think. So the temptation is that, you know, if we go to a conference or speak to colleagues elsewhere in the country, we see some shiny, lovely new AI technology. That's lovely. But when I go and visit other services, never have I seen a nurse or a medical colleague or an OT ask me, do you know what, Aisha, we really need some AI in this pathway. They don't talk about that. They talk about getting the basics right. So some of the stuff that we need to invest in is the basic infrastructure. Do we have the connectivity for people to log on to the systems? Do people have reliable kit that they can use to do their job? So need to get your foundations right. So I'd expect our board colleagues to be really keen to ensure that we've got that foundational infrastructure right. And that isn't sexy. It's not necessarily exciting, but actually without it, we're stuffed, quite frankly. So expect people to have an understanding of that and to ask about that. But also, where can we learn from other organisations? And, you know, the NHS sometimes does lots of really fabulous things, and it does it in really small pockets that unfortunately doesn't get spread and shared appropriately and exploited as much as it could do. So they will be having conversations with other board level colleagues elsewhere. And if they hear of good stuff that's going on, absolutely, let's share that. Let's try and partner up and spread that good practice that exists in lots and lots of different places. And then finally, the other thing, I suppose, is how can we join things up as a system? Because we are working as systems now, and we need to think about the bigger picture and think outside of our own organisational boundaries. And how do we link up primary care and secondary care? How do we link in social care? So those kinds of things. Think big. Ask us about thinking big. That's what we want to hear.
Thank you. Part of this is also, so looking, you're talking about systems there and looking outside the organisation, but I think there is also something really important about looking inside the organisation. And Annalise, I just wondered, what do you think boards can do to bring clinicians along on the digital transformation agenda? Because we know that without that clinical ownership, you're a bit sunk. So what's your take on that?
I think making sure that our lines of communication are open in both directions, so that the clinicians can see what, you know, what our direction of travel is, what we're trying to achieve and why we're trying to achieve that. And So therefore they can buy into what is the trust future, whether it be digital or whether it be something else. For all of those things I talked about, you know, with working with our primary care partners, working with our other secondary care acute trusts within our region, and just that sort of joined up thinking, and with the focus that the patient is the focus of everything that we do, and we're doing everything to make their care the safest and the best that we can to do it. And I think every clinician, from the most senior to the most junior clinician, can buy into that, because that's what our job is, isn't it? We're here to look after our patients. So I think as long as we've got good lines of communication, and the trust board then can also have that feedback from clinicians and see what's working well, what's not working well, and what they need to focus on to make things easier and better.
Yeah. Aisha?
Yeah, I just wanted to come in here about the importance of clinical informatics and getting clinical clinicians involved in that transformation piece, because people have existed in these roles for quite a long time, but it's a profession, I suppose, that's flown under the radar, certainly at least until the pandemic. And now, as I've mentioned, it's starting to be mainstreamed and people are talking about digital transformation much more. Now, Health Education England has published data on how many clinical informaticians and how many of their types of digital professionals we will need going forward if we are to keep pace with the demand that's out there. And actually there is a massive need for more clinicians to get involved in this space, really. And actually, if we just remain technically driven, we'll end up with solutions that are technically fine but actually don't meet the needs of the people providing the care on the ground. So I think there's a responsibility for organisations to really firstly invest in clinical informatics. But we've got, I think, as clinical informaticians, a responsibility to demystify the profession as well, because I think, again, it'd be really easy to see this as a very technical role. I don't see myself as doing a technical role. I'm doing a transformation role using the vehicle, the medium of technology. And I think if we sometimes frame things as technological roles, we put off clinicians that are fantastic in change management. And actually, that's what we need to see. We need that kind of leadership to provide their clinical expertise, because actually we've got technical people to do the technical stuff.
That's really interesting. And I think that's what's coming through in a lot of our work with boards on the digital agenda, which is, it's not really about digital. Annalise, can I bring you in?
Yeah, I just absolutely wholeheartedly second that, in that my role is not a technical role. I am not a techie person at all. I have IT people that are techie and they explain things to me in very basic language, because I don't understand a lot of things that they do. But that's what they're good at, and I'm good at being a clinician, and it's just joining those two things together, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's a really, really important insight, and I think we'll take that away as the quote of the podcast: I'm not a techie person, because I think that's brilliant.
Great, thank you for that. I'm looking forward to that already.
I agree with that as well, Annalise. I'm the least techie CCIO you're likely to meet. And the other point, I suppose, is that actually this is not a one-person job. You can't have a single CCIO leading this transformation. It is too big a job. And I know we've talked about other professions as well, nursing professions, AHPs, pharmacists and social workers as well in our organisation. How do we harness that multidisciplinary expertise? Because yes, I'm a clinician, I happen to be a medic, but there's the best one in the world. No matter how clinical I am, I'm never going to be an expert in nursing workflow. And so it's not just the volume of work that needs to be done, it's actually the expertise from different clinical groups who often work in very, very different ways. And so if you're really serious about digital transformation, it's about harnessing the wealth, the breadth of expertise of the disciplines that are in your organisation.
Can I just build on that then? And how do you think you complement the role of chief information officers and chief nursing information officers? So, you know, you've got something in common, which is CIO in all of your job titles, and then you've each got that different bit, whether it's nursing or clinical or whatever. How do you work with each other and complement each other?
So I think that does vary from organisation to organisation. And I think it is difficult if you are a clinical informatician and you have maybe an allocation of half a day week or a day week to do the job. It's an enormous job. And I'm very lucky in my organisation, we've had a real push for improving resource within clinical informatics. So I work in a team of about 9 different clinicians, not full-time, I should say, but, you know, nine people, certainly. And what that has allowed us to do is to really integrate with our digital directorate and our technical colleagues and our CIO. So rather than it being clinicians that will attend the odd meeting to offer a bit of advice. Actually, we are part of the digital senior management team and we help shape things strategically, and our skills are complementary. They have some overlap. And as we were just saying, the technical people have their expertise in various areas. We've got project management staff that do their bit. We bring a clinical viewpoint. So in order to be a fully rounded MDT, I think you need all of those elements working at the highest levels within the digital directorate, such that we complement each other in the same way that you would as a clinical MDT. You know, from my world, it would be you've got your nursing staff, your psychology staff, medical staff, all working together, and the other disciplines. And actually, that's how you get the best decisions for patients. And in a similar way, having the different digital professions coming together, that's how you get the most robust digital transformation that's sustainable and that sticks.
Thank you. And Annalise, from your perspective at Salisbury, how does that relationship work across your cadre of information officers?
So we've fairly newly appointed CNIO, but I think it's that team approach. We've all got a slightly different perspective on life and how you work within a healthcare setting, and bringing those different opinions and different perspectives means that you can see it from every angle and you can see how the system, because not only is it important of how it works for the clinician and for the nurse and for the admin team, it's just joining that all together and having those different viewpoints is absolutely crucial, because I've got absolutely no idea what the nursing staff do. I'm not supposed to. That's their role. And they are those subject matter experts, aren't they? So they are the most important people to tell you this is how it works on the ground and this is what the problem is. This works really well. We like this. You know, their thoughts and their feedback on it, just join it all together. And that's why you need those different links into those different roles and professions.
I was just smiling to myself as I was reflecting on the question, listening to you, Annalise, as well, because I just go back to some of the conversations that I had when I first started, and I still do on occasion, when I've had a very clinical viewpoint and I said, oh, well, this is really easy. You just drag and drop this code into that and there you go. We connect one wire to another and boom, the systems will talk to each other. And of course, my technical colleagues are holding their heads in their hands because I've clearly oversimplified something to the point of ridiculousness. And in a similar way, you know, they might suggest some way of doing things and I have to just pause them and say, this will triple the administrative workload for the clinicians who are really busy, so we can't possibly do that. And it's only by having those conversations in the same room together that you start to unpick some of the misconceptions that each of the different groups has about the other people's work. And so you come to a shared understanding, something that's actually realistic. Otherwise, you end up with solutions that look brilliant to clinicians or brilliant to technical people, which, of course, in the real world, just aren't a goer.
Absolutely. Going back to electronic outcome forms, I could have gone to the IT team and say, build me an electronic outcome form, but they had absolutely no idea what was needed and how it should be set up and how that flows through your clinic and through, you know, through your session. So it's only by having those discussions and going out to speak to each of those different specialties, they're going to get a bespoke electronic outcome from each specialty. So it works for each specialty. It's not just one form trust-wide, because there are so many individual variations of how people work. And you've got to take that on board. If you want people to embrace it and to use it and to make their working lives better, as much as patient safety improved, you've got to take that on board. They're your users. They've got to be happy with the product.
I think the points you're making here are really interesting around how you're making those connections, and it's that network within your organisation. So just to finish, perhaps we could think a bit about how you're making those networks across your system. And you touched on it a little bit earlier, Aisha, but it'd be really interesting to hear how you're both working with the clinical leaderships and the CCIOs across your systems. Aisha.
Yeah, so in our ICS, we've got really good relationships. We have a CCIO / CNIO group, and we meet periodically for an informal catch-up, and we can talk about things in a less formal setting that obviously accompanies the more formal ICS digital meetings which take place. We're also really lucky in the Northwest. We have our Informatics Skills Development Network, which is one of the most well-developed and well-established skills development networks in the country, and that's a really great place to share what's going on, not just in our local ICS, but also our region. And then finally, as mental health trust CCIOs, we have an informal network where we catch up regularly. We are communicating with each other on a daily basis, really, and sharing good practice. And our online community will often spark conversations between individuals. So if I see something that a colleague down south is doing that I think is fantastic, I've picked up the phone the old-fashioned way, and we've had a really good conversation about how we might implement some of the things that they're doing. And so I think it's a profession. I think it's an area in which you cannot operate in a bubble, really. You absolutely have to have those connections within your system, within your region, nationally, and that's actually outside of the NHS as well, because the NHS itself does not have the skills, ability or resource to do really good digital transformation on its own. So you have to look more broadly outside of your organisation to really do this well.
Thank you. That's a really interesting point about looking beyond the walls of the NHS. Annalise, how does it work in your system?
We're working quite closely with the three other acute trusts within the region at the moment, looking at a shared EPR. So quite a lot of conversations going on with the CCIOs within the acute trusts, within the CCG, primary care, secondary care. So there's quite a lot of work going on with that at the moment. The South West also has a regional CIO, CCIO group that meets two or three times a year, which is actually, again, really useful. I think probably one of the big things for me is NHS Digital Academy and the leftover WhatsApp group from the cohort two. And that is just a profound sense of community, and that, you know, if you've got an issue or you've got a question or you need something, you can just put something out there and somebody will come back to you with something and you can talk things through. So that, again, just you don't feel like you're on your own.
That's really interesting. So you heard it here first. The solution is a WhatsApp group.
Always.
I'm going to draw it to a close now. And I think this has been a really fascinating conversation, where I think one of the things that we've really learned is that this is about a shared language, and it's not a techie language. It's not one which is vested in arcane programming or esoteric project management approaches. It's actually about thinking what's best for patients and the public. What does a service need? What do staff need to do things more effectively? And I think we've touched on some of the bits that our own digital boards program touches on, which is that there's lots of learning from lots of different places, including from beyond the NHS, which is really important. No one has the monopoly on doing things right or well, and we have to be really alive and open to the opportunities that are there. Aisha, Annalise, thank you very much for your time today. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.